You've probably noticed that I and the worship committee have been playing with the order of service. We've changed the way it looks in some respects. Last June, I preached at another church, and I saw one that I liked, so we've been changing things. I'm sure we'll change it again, too. The wording in what is now the centerfold, though, hasn't changed much. We still call it the order of service. I wonder what you would think if we used a more contemporary metaphor, budget. It is a schedule of how we will spend our time, that most valuable of assets these days. Order, after all, is an old-fashioned word. Where else do you use that word in this way? According to philosopher Jacob Needleman, money is the most important thing in our lives. It costs us our time, health, prestige, and power. Yet it is the last thing we want to discuss. It has been said that people will talk about almost anything rather than money. Well, our time today is going to be budgeted, and we will be speaking of money and the role it plays in our lives. It's been said, give me 5 minutes with a person's checkbook, and of course that includes their credit card statements and their cash log, and I will tell you where their heart is. That word heart implies relationships. Of course, life is all about relationships. And yes, we have a relationship with money too. What is this essential thing we call money? UU minister Dan Hotchkiss, in his book, Ministry and Money, has a neat answer to this question. Money is a medium of power through which we act and are acted upon. A spiritual life that does not concern itself with money can have little effect upon our daily lives, especially in a culture as saturated by financial forces as ours. Strong feelings about money threaten to preoccupy us. Shame at lacking it, pride in having it, fear of losing it, compulsive eagerness to spend it, gluttonous delight in hoarding it. Each of these feelings has a moral and a spiritual dimension. At worst, shame can render us unconscious of our kinship with God's family. Pride can make us feel like gods ourselves. Fear can take away the courage necessary for moral action. Compulsive spending, like compulsive hoarding, turns our attention toward ourselves and away from the well-being of others. At best, though, money can be such a spiritual plus. The thoughtful use of money, spending, saving, investing, and giving is an effective way to care for others and realize our visions of a better world. And maybe that's why some of those questions I posed for the meditation time are so discomforting. Emotions surround money. Well, I know I didn't like thinking about some of them for very long. The first question was, do you feel rich or poor? When I try to answer that, it depends on what part of my life I'm focusing on. And at first I figure, well, I'm somewhere in the middle. But the longer I think about it, the less poor I count myself. It is true I couldn't afford to buy a house closer to where I work, and I'm disappointed in that. It is true there are other things that I wouldn't mind having in my life, maybe a better vehicle. I'd love to take a vacation to Ellesmere Island, my long-time dream holiday. However, I have a house to live in, one I like a lot. I have a reason for being, a job and a place in my world. I have a loving partner and good friends and family. I have good health. What else do I need? It is enough. So what difference does it make that I consider myself rich instead of poor? Well, somehow it moves me away from that cash-strapped farmer's daughter who shared classes with the kids from the better side of town and who always felt that social gap. It makes me feel better about myself. I feel like I do have enough. It allows me to feel more generous. What is enough? Sheldon Kopp relates this story. When the great rabbis saw misfortune threatening his people, the Jews, it was his custom to go into a certain part of the forest to meditate. There he would light a fire, say a special prayer, and the miracle would be accomplished and the misfortune averted. Later, when his disciple had occasion to intercede with heaven, he would go to the same place in the forest and say, "Master of the universe, listen. I do not know how to light the fire, but I am still able to say the prayer." And again, the miracle would be accomplished. Still later, another rabbi, in order to save his people once more, would go to the forest and say, "I do not know how to light the fire. I do not know the prayer, but I know the place, and this must be sufficient." Years later, it fell to yet another rabbi to overcome misfortune. Sitting in his armchair, his head in his hands, he spoke to God, "I'm unable to light the fire, and I do not know the prayer. I cannot even find the place in the forest. All I can do is tell the story, and this must be sufficient." And it was enough. What is needed is essence, the basics. That is enough. I wonder why we think we need so much more. The questions numbered 4 and 5 are connected, I think. They ask, do you spend your money in a way that allows you to be generous with others? And is my sense of self-worth fundamentally based on being or having? We lived in Detroit, Michigan for a year, and if ever there was a car-centered culture, that was it. We lived on a street of very modest 50-year-old houses built quickly right after World War II for returning soldiers. They were very basic at the time, lacking even insulation, and seem even more so today. The neighbor on one side of us was our landlord. He had lived there for almost all of that 50 years and had fixed his house up considerably. The garden in the back was his additional living space and was so very inviting with its awning and waterfall and flowers. The house we lived in wasn't so welcoming. The cats noticed this immediately, that there was only one bush to hide under, right beside the front door near the traffic. There was a fence to keep our dog in, mostly, but no other landscaping. Some grass around the garage and house. No wonder the cats liked jumping the fence into Bud's garden. The place on the other side of us was much like ours. Their backyard had one very large maple tree right in the middle. Nothing else. The grass had mostly died in all the shade, so it didn't get mowed or raked or much notice taken of it all. The pride of this man's life was his car, a fancy, large domestic sedan, maybe an Oldsmobile. It was his status symbol. It seemed to me that this guy felt bigger and better because of what he owned, what he had, rather than who he was. When he hydroplaned on this rain-slick highway and dinged a bumper, you would have thought that his child had been injured seriously. It was a very big deal. Anyone caught in that kind of mindset where what you have means more than who you are would have more difficulty feeling generous towards others, it seems to me, or even generous to an institution like a church, which includes yourself as well as others, but of course also others into the future. We live in such a consuming-based economy that I doubt that there are more than a very few of us who are immune to that advertising and our whole material culture. So what we can hope to strive for is balance, perspective. We can be conscious of what the culture says about money so we can make our own decisions about it. That's why I pose these questions to myself as well as everyone. Not that I expect any of us, even me, to be perfect, but I know I need to learn how to be more generous. There's a fictional but observant minister sidekick who had this to say about people and money. And this sidekick's name is Coyote. Sitting in the donut shop, looking me in the eye, Coyote said, "According to what I've seen, there are many money games you humans play. Some are healthy, some are unhealthy. Some of them are spiritually nutritious, sort of whole wheat oat bran money games. And some are like these donuts, delicious, but in the long run, unhealthy." "Tell me about the unhealthy ones first," the minister asks. "The unhealthy ones are games involving taking up more space than one human needs, using more of the earth's resources than one human needs, using money to control other people's lives and other people's spirits, using money to buy people and exploit people. This is a matter of human spiritual growth. Will you humans play healthy games with your money or psychologically destructive ones?" So what are some healthy money games? Coyote declares, "Investments in people are always healthy money games. When you humans place your bets with your discretionary money, you put your money where your spirit is." There surely was spirit here last night in this room at our congregational dinner. We celebrated the community that we are and all the individuals of whom it is comprised. How sweet our music can be when we all play and sing together, especially after enough practice and careful listening to each other. We put our money where our spirit is, like right here at Beacon. True wealth is a state of being, a state of grace. It transcends that budgetary bottom line. It's where you know beyond the shadow of a doubt that you and your money have done everything possible to make your loved ones safe and sound. It's where money flows into your life and out of it into the larger world generously. It's where your money will sustain you, but not define you nor assign you your true worth. Let us, each of us, take one more step toward understanding that the role money plays in our lives and in the life of Beacon Unitarian Church, knowing that we can support the mission of this church generously. Amen.